This is Health and Health Workers in Conflict. We have an incredibly diverse set of speakers and subjects to discuss today, including starting with a historical overview, which is quite unique at this conference. Well, let me introduce the speakers right now very briefly. Our first speaker is Michael Grodin, who is in the Health Law, Bioethics, and Human Rights Department at Boston University. He is also director of the Project on Medicine and the Holocaust. He's an internationally recognized scholar of the Holocaust and has received citations from the Holocaust Memorial Museum for his contributions to research on Holocaust education and remembrance. A quite unique contribution. Second speaker is Stephanie Caden. Dr. Caden is director of the International Emergency Medicine Fellowship at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and instructor in emergency medicine at Harvard Medical School. She has developed emergency medical care in Bhutan, Fiji, Nepal, Japan, and on, and provided disaster relief to survivors of the 2005 Kashmir earthquake in Pakistan, helped rebuild health systems for Burundian refugees in Tanzania, and led a team to improve rural public health in Uganda, and much, much more. Next, Susanna Serkin, who is Director of International Policy and Partnerships at Physicians for Human Rights, where she oversees PHR's international policy engagement with the UN, domestic and international justice systems, and human rights coalitions. She joined Physicians for Human Rights in 1987 and serves as a senior advisor across all areas, and today will be speaking in her capacity as director of the Program on Sexual Violence in Conflict Regions, which she created in 2011. I'll be speaking last. I'm a senior scholar at the Center for Public Health and Human Rights at Johns Hopkins. So, without further ado, I've already moved to the first slide for Mike, so go for it.
So I'm going to be just doing a brief overview of some work that I've been involved in for 30 years. This is the new book that I just finished, actually, that's coming out in the summer. And so I'm going to be reviewing a chapter of history which many people are unfamiliar with. I wrote a book on the Nazi doctors, and there's been a lot of work on that, but there's been almost nothing written about Jewish physicians and public health professionals and their role during the Holocaust. So why study medicine in the Holocaust? To understand a watershed event in the history of the world and how medicine played a crucial role, to study the ramifications of prejudice, racism, and stereotyping, to explore the dangers of silence and indifference in the face of human rights abuses, to examine the use and abuse of power, especially the role of medicine during the Holocaust. And what I'm going to talk about today is the exemplary role of Jewish physicians who had choiceless choices and made them during the Shoah. Let's see if I can figure out. So the Nazi doctors were intimately involved in the Holocaust. Physicians played an absolute critical role of medicalizing the Nazi ideology. The Nazis needed the doctors to carry out their eugenic regime, and the physicians needed the Nazis. This was at the height of the Holocaust, 50% of all physicians, German physicians, were members of the Nazi Party. Sevenfold were members of the SS. They were involved in all aspects of the Holocaust, beginning with the sterilization programs. That moved on to the child euthanasia programs, the adult euthanasia programs, and then the doctors and nurses who perfected the gassing in the mental hospitals moved to Poland and set up the gas chambers and supervised at the selections. This was all done under a public health metaphor where the Jews were seen as diseased, as a diseased race, as an infectious agent, as a parasite, as a cancer, and so the doctors were carrying out public health measures. And so this slide here is a wonderful slide. The doctors looked under the microscope, and they see Jews, gypsies, capitalists, and they diagnose the problem and eradicate the problem through sterilization and through murder. But the ghettos were established in pre-war Germany, and what I'm going to talk about is the public health measures. The Nazis, in trying to create the image of the Jews being diseased, And so they created a situation where they put Jews in the ghettos to, as a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will, to justify that the Jews were diseased and that they could exterminate the Jews. Ironically, we have evidence in my research that Jews were actually in a healthier state than non-Jews prior to the ghettoization. We can talk about why. But the conditions in the ghettos were set up to spread infectious diseases. They were locked in the ghetto. There was an overpopulation, a density of 10 people per house. Starvation was the goal, to starve the entire ghetto. They killed the trained personnel. They destroyed the equipment and facilities. The inhabitants were denied soap, and disinfectants, electricity, clean water, sewage removal, and decreased host resistance due to starvation. The Jews lived on 300 to 400 calories a day until they died. And therefore, there were infections that came about, typhus being the foremost one. The Nazis were incredibly fearful of typhus, and they caused a situation to establish typhus and then use that as a justification to wipe out the Jewish population. Typhoid was also very common because of contaminated water, and tuberculosis, particularly tuberculosis reinfection. So what this book is about is the Jewish response. And the Jewish physicians and public health professionals did a remarkable job establishing public health education, enforcing bodily hygiene, which was no small affair, and set up a mechanism to inspect buildings and latrines, to distribute food, mandatory immunizations, quarantine situations, and sanitary control centers. This was done through the Judenrat, which were Jewish councils elected by the community. Many contained doctors, such as in the Kovno ghetto, and they made all major decisions regarding the logistics of the ghetto, including health, work, food allocation, hygiene, care of orphans and the poor. They particularly struggled with the dilemma of complying with the Nazi orders or resisting them, and how to involve themselves in this process. So the Jews were moved into the Warsaw Ghetto. Warsaw Ghetto was established in 1940, which was the largest of the Jewish ghettos. There was over 400,000 Jews in 1.2 square miles, and the health was the responsibility of the Judenrat. Food was a paramount concern. There was lack of food, and therefore starvation was a planned outcome of this. The Jewish physicians actually studied hunger, and remarkably enough, because this was an example of incredible starvation, and the physicians performed research documenting the physiological and anatomical changes due to starvation. They hid these in canisters, and they were found after the war, and we actually have the publication of physicians left the research records of what happens during starvation. There was actually medical education that continued within the ghetto. Absolutely remarkable. An underground medical and nursing school. This despite the fact that the physicians and nurses knew that they were never going to make it out of the ghetto. They wanted to continue education. They trained doctors in the hospitals, and they had impromptu education about how to treat patients without medicine or supplies, which was the situation they were found in. The Vilna ghetto, which is a very, very important ghetto, was established in 1941. The inhabitants were forced to work in and outside the ghetto, and there was a Jewish hospital in Vilna. There was a hospital in the ghetto that was lucky because many of the hospitals were outside of the ghettos, but this one was in the ghetto. And the public health system remained intact to ensure sanitation and hygiene. They organized sanitary districts, sanitary brigades, and the outpatient clinics were headed by Kalman Shapiro, who's a very, very well-known physician of the day. They created healthcare facilities and hospitals, and the so-called sanitary police. They struggled with how the sanitary police should operate through propaganda or strict penalties. They tried to keep the ill from entering the hospital because they did not want to give the Nazis a reason to destroy it. So this was a tension between taking people who were sick and putting them in the hospital, which would be the reason for the ghetto annihilation, or to allow them to stay in the community and infect others. This became a problem in the camps as well. They did research about anemia, giardia, surgical diseases, and vitamin deficiency. The Kovno ghetto was established in July and August of 41 in the Slobodka neighborhood. They were small houses with no running water, bathing facilities, or sewers. Each person had less than 10 square feet of living space. The Jews were forced into labor, and they also tried to deal with the public health problems. There were remarkable, in my research, There are responsa, which are Jewish rabbinic decisions. So people were asked questions of the rabbis. They tried to maintain their Judaism during the time of the ghetto and the camps. And Rabbi Ephraim Oshri, who survived the ghetto, the Kovno ghetto, and his responsa, his decisions are published in a four-volume Hebrew set. But these were unique circumstances of the Holocaust requiring interpretations of Jewish law. Questions concerning pregnancy and abortion. If you were found to be pregnant, you were killed by the Nazis. So what to do about abortions? Complying with the Nazis. There's questions about kosher food, and obviously there wasn't kosher food. Remarkably enough, the question that was asked was not whether it's okay to eat kosher, non-kosher food, which of course, because saving a life, it would be okay in Jewish law, but whether you need to see a blessing over the non-kosher food. So it just shows you how remarkably they were trying to keep up, allowing the Jews to remain Jewish despite the circumstances. There were Jewish physicians involved in the camps with a much more limited role, obviously, because they were in the death camps in Auschwitz. But there was also an infirmary where if you were sent there, you were killed. And the doctors tried to decide whether they should, again, allow people to stay in the barracks and infect others, or whether they should send them to the hospital, to the ward, and then they would be killed. 1.1 million people were exterminated. In Block 10, which was the place where Klauberg did his research on concentration camp prisoners, and Jewish physicians sabotaged and falsified records. There was a famous case of him doing a sterilization research where the Jewish physician allegedly did the sterilization, and then the woman survived the camps, actually, and had a pregnancy later on, which is a really wonderful story. So this is Auschwitz Block 10, where medical experiments were conducted. And now we have a little short video. 5 minutes, I understand. Let's see if we can get this to work. Oh. You want to, can you? There we go. Oh. Is the person still here? If I can get this video to work, it's really.
Why don't you go on? I'm just going to see if you can find a tech person. We can actually watch it later.
Okay.
If we have to.
Okay. So, this is my conclusion because the film takes a little time.
Yeah.
But the Jewish doctors had choiceless choice. Oh, I just wanted to run this video. It sucks.
Thank you
very much. There we go.
The doctor's role is always to heal, whether that be to lend a helping hand, whether that be to comfort, whether that be to listen. I began my work with Holocaust survivors, and I've been interested in resiliency and the issue of how people deal with trauma. And then I became interested in perpetrators and did a book on the Nazi doctors and the Nuremberg trials. Then I said, gee, I've been doing all this, why don't I work on the doctors, the Jewish doctors, try to put together in one place all the documents and all the histories, all the stories, all the interviews of Jewish doctors in the ghettos and camps during the Holocaust.
When I came to college, the reason I came to BU was to do medical ethics, and specifically Jewish medical ethics. And when I came to Dr. Grodin, I really didn't know very much about Jewish doctors and the Holocaust. So we just started reading and reading and reading and talking to a lot of Holocaust scholars to try and find these texts because they are few and far between in English.
The physicians that were involved in the Holocaust did not write in general after the war. It was kind of a general conspiracy of silence. Many of them had a lot of guilt about what happened and what went on during that time. And a lot of concern that people wouldn't understand the horrible decisions that they had to make under incredible circumstances.
Dr. Gisela Pearl was a gynecologist during the Holocaust in Auschwitz. I think her story was the most poignant for me.
We were given no medicines, no instruments. The fever-ridden patients shivered on the bare planks without blankets. Lights crawled over their bodies, carrying germs from one to the other.
Gisela Pearl was an incredibly resilient woman. She was able to do the abortions and even the killing of the newborns.
There survival, and a mother would be killed. So mothers that somehow hid their pregnancy until that point, she still aborted those children.
No one will ever know what it meant to me to destroy these babies. After years and years of medical practice, childbirth was still to me the most beautiful, the greatest miracle of nature. I love those newborn babies, not as a doctor, but as a mother, and it was again and again my own child whom I killed to save the life of a woman.
You have zero resources. You know that the fact that you are trying to save somebody else makes you less likely to survive.
But she did what she had to do, and she was able to give hope, hope in a place of no hope.
God is good to me. By a miracle, every one of these women recovered and was able to work, which, at least for a while, saved her life.
Physicians found themselves in every place that other Jews found themselves, whether it be in the ghettos, in the camps, but they had a special role to play and a special obligation to try to help rather than to be bystanders. There were hospitals in Warsaw Ghetto, there was a medical school that was established, places where you can imagine they tried to maintain normalcy. And so the Warsaw Ghetto hospital was a remarkable place where they had inadequate facilities, inadequate equipment, inadequate medications, and yet they tried to do whatever they could with whatever they had.
What they had was the ability to try and convince their patients that their lives would go on, that this was a stage.
People looked up to the doctors, and so if the doctors were able to carry on, then perhaps in some way they were able to carry on as well.
The letters that Dr. Elf wrote to his children after he had been smuggled out of the ghetto, I think, is the text that stands out most in my mind. Dr. Elf, he was the head of the Huguenot in the Kovna ghetto. A lot of doctors were placed in these positions of power within the ghetto, especially whenever the Nazis were doing actions, so taking out people who would live and who would die. He would stand there for hours and hours and try and negotiate for each individual person to be kept alive.
One of the issues was who would be able to get back to work, because that was their life. If you couldn't work, you'd be killed. And so a decision had to be made.
I am the man who with my own eyes saw those about to die. With my own ears, I heard the awe-inspiring and terrible symphony, the weeping and screaming of 10,000 people, old and young, a scream that tore at the heart of heaven.
He wrote this letter to his children that he had smuggled out of the ghetto. He just writes about how the only thing that brings him and his wife any comfort as they're sitting starving to death in the ghetto is fantasizing about how his children are going to grow up and the fact that they will grow up and who they're going to be.
Our innermost desire is to see you again, to embrace you, and tell you once again how close we are to you and how our hearts beat as we remember you and see you before us. As we stand here at the very gates of hell with a knife poised in our necks, only your images, dear ones, sustain us.
This letter was also smuggled out to his children that he never ever saw again. For me, I think what was so compelling about this project was that specific medical ethic, how Jews during the Holocaust made these decisions, how their profession influenced them.
We can never, nor should we ever, hopefully be in a situation that the make the kind of decisions they made. The most important thing that I've learned is that there is an incredible will to maintain one's dignity and one's sense of self.
So Jewish doctors had choiceless choices, but many performed heroically in providing care and comfort and maintaining exceptional professional integrity. And I want to close from reading the opening statement at the International Military Tribunal. The wrongs which we seek to condemn and punish have been so calculated, so malignant, and so devastating, civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored because it cannot survive their being repeated. Thank you.